And now, it's time for our weekly news round. Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Souvenir stalls that sell keyrings, fridge magnets and figurines of Jesus giving a thumbs up and a cheery wink in front of Rome's most famous monuments have been given their marching orders by the city's mayor. The stands pitched in front of the Trevi Fountain, the Pantheon and within some of the capital's most picturesque piazzas have been branded an eyesore. The stalls crammed with rosary beads, plastic statues of Michelangelo's David, miniature leaning towers of Pisa, and plumed centurions' helmets often obscure the view of some of the city's most celebrated sites. Rome Council is also calling for the removal of vans that sell visitors overpriced drinks, sandwiches, snacks and sweets near the Colosseum and the Circus Maximus, the ancient arena where chariots once raced. They ruin the image of Rome, said Virginia Raggi, the mayor of the city. For years, the monuments of the city have been tarnished by vendors who sell drinks, panini and trinkets in front of Rome's architectural jewels. This is no longer tolerable. At least half the trinket stalls and snack vans will have to move to new locations, the mayor announced after deliberations by the city council. The purge will restore dignity to monuments and piazzas that are among the most beautiful in the world, said Ms. Raggi, a member of the Five Star Movement, which governs at the national level in coalition with the Hard Right League Party. But stall owners were dismayed by the announcement, arguing that they provide a service to tourists and that if closed down, they will not be able to find alternative work. This has been in my family for seven generations, said Angelo Di Porto, 40, who runs a stall directly in front of the Trevi Fountain, the monument which was immortalized by the 1960 Federico Fellini film La Dolce Vita when the actress Anita Ekberg waded into its waist-high water. We pay an annual rent and a whole range of taxes, so we are a legitimate business. We offered to move to a less conspicuous spot, but the council didn't listen to us. The majority of the stall owners are Jewish. The Vatican gave them their licenses in the 19th century, when it was considered unseemly for Catholics to make money out of selling religious paraphernalia, such as crucifixes and rosaries. Most of the families that run the stalls are still Jewish, said Mr. Di Porto. My ancestors came here as slaves from Jerusalem when the city was sacked by the Roman Emperor Titus. We are among the true Romans. While the city council has vowed to remove half the stalls, no timetable has been given yet. We haven't been told yet when we have to move, said Mr. Di Porto. We hope the mayor will have a rethink. The Church of England is to build affordable homes on thousands of acres of its land as the Archbishop of Canterbury pledged radical action to tackle the housing crisis. The Most Reverend Justin Welby has launched a commission to identify how the church can use its extraordinary resources to tackle the housing shortage and promote community spirit. A church report produced to coincide with the launch this week urged the commission to consider using surplus church land for affordable housing, citing examples where vicarages and disused church halls have been demolished to make way for new homes. The report said 6,600 acres of land owned by the church commissioners have been earmarked for housing, with planning permission secured or sought by the church for 9,000 homes, including 2,500 affordable homes. The Bishop of Barking, the Right Reverend Peter Hill, said the church must put our money and resources where our mouth is. The Archbishop's Commission on Housing, Church and Community will meet over the next 18 months. Speaking to The Times at a community centre in Northampton yesterday, the Archbishop said the church could not simply say that something must be done. He said that the solution must involve building communities, not just houses, explaining that shared facilities on housing estates helps to build support networks between neighbours. He added, "We've got to be really canny about this. It's no use just saying, give away the land, because the land provides the money which enables the church to do its work with poor communities all over the country. But at the same time, you've got to be imaginative and generous." The Building Community Report, produced by the Church of England and the Centre for Theology and Community, said of the church commissioners who manage the church's centrally owned assets, "Their wider rural land portfolio of 100,000 acres is well placed to continue to delivering new homes and communities across England. It warned, however, that the planning system is often prohibitively expensive and overly restrictive for churches wishing to build affordable homes on their own land. A Chinese city is offering rewards that can be more than £1,000 to anyone who can snitch on religious worship that lacks official approval. The incentives in Guangzhou are part of a national effort to bring all religious groups under Communist Party control. China is seeking in particular to uproot underground churches and mosques which have survived periodic crackdowns in the past decades. In the region of Xinjiang in the far west, the authorities have detained as many as 1 million Muslims as part of a war on terrorism. China blamed radical religious thought for violence that has disrupted the region until 2016. Zhu Zhaohong, head of approved Protestant churches, warned at the country's top political advisory conference last month of the danger of independent churches. Anti-China Western forces seek to upset our country's social stability or even overthrow our government through Christianity, Mr. Zhu said. Guangzhou's religious affairs officials will reward useful information with 100 to 1,000 yuan, £11 to £114, helping the authorities to arrest foreign religious leaders and key members inside China who will get up to 10,000 yuan, about 2 months' average salary. By official counts, China has up to 40 million Christians, but membership of underground or house churches may well exceed that of the official church. Police on Tuesday charged an Indian bishop with repeatedly raping a nun at a rural convent in a case that has cast new shadow on the Roman Catholic Church's global sex abuse crisis. Franco Malacal was charged with raping the nun several times between 2014 and 2016, Kay Subhash, police deputy superintendent in the district of the southern state of Kerala, where the investigation was carried out, told AFP. The bishop also faces charges of unlawful detention, unnatural sex, and abuse of authority. Malacal, who faces a maximum punishment of life imprisonment, has vociferously denied the allegations. The police report backing the charges ran to more than 100 pages and contained statements from nuns, priests and other bishops, media reports said. The victim filed a complaint in June last year, but police only started formal questioning in September as fury over the case mounted. In a rare public show of dissent within the church, five nuns staged days of protests with dozens of supporters to force authorities to take the allegations seriously. Malacal was arrested in October before being released on bail. Senior members of the church in the southern state have supported the 55-year-old bishop, however, and he was cheered when he returned to his diocese. Sexual abuse by clergy and the failure to take action has mired the Roman Catholic Church in scandal across the world in recent years. In February, Pope Francis publicly addressed the sexual abuse of nuns by clerics for the first time, insisting the Vatican takes seriously reports of sexual abuse and the sexual slavery of nuns. Malacal is accused of repeatedly assaulting the nun from the Missionaries of Jesus Order at the St. Francis Mission in Kerala. The bishop was head of the order. Speaking to AFP, Sister Anna Palmer Kalamangalaf, one of the five nuns who protested outside Kerala's High Court, said they sought to draw attention to church authorities who were misusing positions of power. The sister from the Jalandhar diocese in the state said she was relieved and delighted at the charges. "We were able to achieve this despite stiff opposition from all sides. We had no one on our side to fight for us but Christ." She insisted the protests were not against the church, but aimed at certain figures who misused the holy powers vested in them, she added. "Other than the truth as our weapon, we never had anything else on our side." She told how repeated approaches to senior church officials were ignored. "When they realized that we wouldn't back down, they had us transferred and then made false cases against our family," she said. These included allegations they had made death threats against the accused bishop. "We were then left with no option but to approach the police and register a case against the bishop. What else could we do?" Police say they're looking into other cases of abuse of nuns and allegations that four Kerala priests blackmailed women during confession to force them to have sex. Christians, overwhelmingly Catholic, are the third largest religious group in India, About 80% of the country's 1.3 billion population is Hindu, followed by a sizable Muslim minority. In Australia, an anti-abortion Christian preacher who was told to shut up by angry commuters says he does not regret preaching on a packed train despite receiving death threats. US evangelist Philip Blair made headlines last week when he boarded a Sydney train at Martin Place and ranted about abortion. In a video posted to YouTube on Wednesday, Mr. Blair issued an apology claiming the public and media misinterpreted his preaching. He said he'd been the target of death threats and thousands of aggressive emails since the train incident due to what he claimed was misinformation. "I'm going to take a couple of minutes because I want to explain a few things. I want to convey more heart to you and I want to issue some apologies to, I think, a couple of people who deserve them," he said. "Quite frankly, I'm tired of getting death threats and thousands of angry emails from a lot of people who are taking information for what is instead of doing the research and finding out what the facts are." Mr. Blair said he understood that a lot of people were emotionally distraught and angry about what had happened, but hoped the Australian public could forgive him. "Hopefully we can move forward. I love you guys," he said. Mr. Blair was slammed last week for preaching about abortion on a Sydney train and telling a man in a wheelchair he was too bitter to be healed by God. The first controversial moment occurred on April the 1st when he boarded the train and told commuters their sins could be saved by Jesus Christ. "We care more about saving the whales than we care about saving our unborn children," he said in a video. He then got into a shouting match with commuter Malcolm Frawley. Mr. Frawley was applauded by passengers on the train after telling Blair to shut up and accused him of being selfish for ignoring repeated requests for silence. On Wednesday, Mr. Blair said he did not apologise for the preaching, but rather regretted how he handled the situation. "I am a Christian, full gospel preacher, and I try to walk with love as much as I can. I'm not so sorry for preaching on a train, but I am sorry that when you watch the videos, I do appear to be angry," he said. "It was never my intent to be angry. I did feel like I got upset towards the end because a lot of people were yelling at me when really my sole motivation for being on that train was to tell you, look, I care." The same day as the train incident, Mr. Blair was filmed targeting a man in a wheelchair who was talking with a florist. "You're in a wheelchair. God can touch you, but you're too bitter to ask," Blair shouted. Mr. Blair also apologised to the man in the wheelchair and admitted it was wrong for him to generalise. "I am also very, very sorry for how the whole thing went down with the guy in the wheelchair," he said. "It was wrong for me to generalise that man. I don't know anything about him. I don't know what the situation is in." Mr. Blair went on to discuss how he continues to pray for people in need of help. "We've prayed for people in wheelchairs to rise up and walk," he said. Wednesday's video comes 2 days after the Christian preacher claimed a satanic agenda has spread through Australia. In a video posted on Monday, Blair declared Australia was being overrun by darkness while standing in front of Parliament House. "A very pervasive satanic agenda has spread throughout Australia," he said. "This is a battle cry to rise up against the forces of darkness that are overrunning our lands. Now is the time for prayer." Blair has been in Australia since March the 27th and regularly uploads videos of his public preaching to social media. He has spoken against evolution and abortion and is part of the Torch of Christ Ministries. The 150-year-old heart of a French priest is on a US tour with the Roman Catholic relic in New York City on its latest stop. It was on display Saturday at St. Patrick's Cathedral on Fifth Avenue, where both the faithful and the curious lined up to see the human organ behind glass. The Knights of Columbus fraternity is sponsoring the pilgrimage of this heart, which has been into 28 states so far, with more coming up. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, is to lead a Sunday procession venerating the heart of St. John Vianney, who was a priest in the southern French town of Ars, outside Lyon. He lived during the French Revolution, helping to hide priests on the run. The tradition of preserving the body parts of saintly Catholics goes back to the Middle Ages in Italy. When St. Catherine of Siena died in Rome, the hometown of Siena wanted her remains, but they didn't want to get caught making off with the whole body and decided to take just her head. Vianney is considered the patron saint of parish priests, famed for hearing confessions for endless hours with an ear so understanding that he drew Catholics from all around Europe. The organisation said last Friday that the name of the tour also refers to the good character that he should belong to every priest. Vianney was famous for his tireless work on behalf of his people, especially in the confessional, and also for the holiness of his life. He would recount to them the sins they left out, because he instinctively felt who they are, says Joseph Cullen, a member of the Knights of Columbus, but he had a heart of gold. In the next week, Vianney's heart will be displayed in schools and churches in other parts of New York City, Staten Island, Queens and Brooklyn, and Long Island, as well as other venues on the East Coast. The relic is to return to its permanent home at the French Shrine in Ars in early June. The US tour began in November. Vianney was recognized by the church as a saint, and since then priests especially have honored him and looked to him as a good model for the way they're supposed to be living their lives, said Monsignor Robert Ritchie, who has worked as a pastor at the parishes in the Bronx and Harlem. It's a perfect time, especially for priests in the middle of the scandals and all of the stories that are going around. We need an example of somebody good, holy, and pure. In Australia, a review has been launched into laws that allow religious institutions to discriminate against gay students and teachers. The federal government has asked the Australian Law Reform Commission to undertake the study following the report on religious freedom by former Minister Philip Ruddock. The review will also consider protecting the right of people to promote the view that marriage should only be between a man and a woman, following the passage of federal same-sex marriage laws. The report is due by April the 10th, 2020. And finally, our church was saddened to learn this week of the death of one of our most valued members, someone else. Someone's passing creates a vacancy that will be difficult to fill. Else has been with us for many years, and for every one of those years, someone did far more than a normal person's share of the work. Whenever there was a job to do, a class to teach, or a meeting to attend, one name was on everyone's list. Let someone else do it. Whenever leadership was mentioned, this wonderful person was looked to for inspiration as well as the results. Someone else could work with that group. It was common knowledge that someone else was among the most liberal givers in our church. Whenever there was a financial need, everyone just assumed someone else would make up the difference. Someone else was a wonderful person, sometimes appearing superhuman. Were the truth known, everybody expected too much of someone else. Now someone else is gone. We wonder what we are going to do. Someone else has left a wonderful example to follow. But who is going to follow it? Who is going to do the things someone else did? When you are asked to help this year, remember, we can't depend on someone else anymore. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.